Okay, there is so much to say in Parshas Bahar. Parshas Bahar by itself is a packed Parsha, and even this very brief Shlishi, and briefer than it could be, being that it's a divided up Parsha, that it's a single Parsha, and yet there is quite a lot in here, and quite a lot that's relevant to the theme of the year of Shemitah, so it takes particular relevance for us. And we had the opportunity a few weeks ago to talk about the Het Mechira, some of the major themes that are relevant specifically to the Het Mechira will come up in this Aliyah. So we'll take this opportunity to talk a little bit about the major Shemitah themes that come up here, the major broader Hashgafic themes, the ideas that are relevant to the Het Mechira specifically, and hopefully also to touch upon Lag BaOmer as well. So a lot to do in a brief time slot. So just to begin with, so the Aliyah starts off here at Pasuk Yitaz. V'nasna ha'aretz kriyah, v'yachaltem la'sova, v'yishavtem la'vetach aleha. So the land will provide for you, and you will dwell in the land in safety. And the Torah's Konim has a comment here about this idea of dwelling in safety. You won't be panicked, nor will you be exiled. And the Torah Tamima suggests that the relationship between them suggests the theme that we have, that Shemitah is a part of what keeps us safe in the land. And Shemitah, we know, has that theme of bitachon. So the observance of Shemitah, which is itself an expression of bitachon, so that shows that we are expressing this confidence, so that is a part of what will allow us to continue in the land in a confident way. And this is consistent with how Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch interprets this pasuk, that the language of Yishavtem Lavetach, that the bitachon comes from how you are dwelling, that you will dwell in a way that will give us the bitachon, and therefore the previous phrase is also of that type, v'achaltem la'sova, that the way you eat is what will give you the sova, what will give you the abundance, that it's because of the bitachon that is conveyed through these actions that is going to yield this result, and that's a part of what the pasuk is conveying. So these next two psukim are extremely significant for the whole philosophy of Shemitah and also very, very relevant for the Het Mechira and the debate surrounding the Het Mechira and also how we relate to a lot of things about it. So these psukim are extremely important. So the next pasuk says, V'chisamru, Manochal Bashana Hashviyas. Hey, lo nizra, lo ne'asofas tu'aseinu. So maybe you'll say, what are we going to eat in the seventh year? Because here it is, we're not planting and we're not collecting our produce. So the next pasuk is going to tell us that there's going to be a bracha that's going to happen, so we shouldn't worry. But some of those farim point out that it sounds a little bit funny because so this bracha happens because we're expressing a challenge, because we're going to say, wait a minute, what's going to happen? What are we going to eat? So what happens if we don't say that? So shouldn't that be better? So some of the Svarim bring from Rav Zusha, the Avnei Nezer quotes that, the Shemesh Shmuel quotes as well, the Avnei Nezer quoting that, the other Svarim quote him as well, that yes, indeed, that would be better if they didn't express any doubt, so then it would have just happened automatically what the next pasuk is going to relay. And it's because they express this doubt that that's why there has to be a commandment of a bracha in order to counteract it. So it's kind of a step removed. But it would have been better if they hadn't expressed any doubt. Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Darash Moshe, so he has a different understanding. He says that if they don't ask, so then indeed there won't be the increase in fruits, but it'll come from a different place, that the fruit that they have will be able to provide in a more powerful way, as we find through these parshiyos in general, that a little bit will go a great distance. So it'll be able to sustain them in a more powerful sense. So it seems that that's an even more miraculous thing. But the correlation here is that if they express a lack of faith, so to speak, if they say, well, how are we going to get through this? So then they're going to need more in order to be able to get through, because they're going to need this visible reassurance. While if they don't have that moment of doubt, if they don't have this questioning, so then it's going to be even better. They'll be able to be sustained with less visible abundance. And that's even better. But if they ask, and they say, how are we going to make it through? So then Akash Baruch is going to have to provide more volume, because they're going to need to be able to see that there is more to get them through. The Malbim suggests that it's no other alternative, that it's just the Mela going to happen, because the language of the Chiz Omru means it's going to happen, and that if this was something that may or may not happen, maybe they will ask, maybe they won't ask, it would have said Im. And that's the general approach he has here. My grandfather, Mr. Shiva's Nefesh, the Torah Tamima, he doesn't understand this, because he knows the Gemara says in a few places that he, in general, as it's used in the Torah, has four different meanings. So why is the Malbim assuming that here he is meant to convey that it's definitely going to happen? Unclear, but that's the way the Malbim understands it. So in that case, there isn't a different scenario here that could turn out in an alternative way. But what will happen, okay, when this question is posed? And the Ramban, just to also make clear, the Ramban reads the Pasuk a little bit differently, because they're not really worried what are they going to eat during the Shviyas, during the Shemitah year. Because that, they're able to, just al pidarach hateva, they have from what was produced in the sixth year. So really, as the Ramban reads it, you kind of have to read the Pasuk as if you cut it up and rearrange it, that chisomru b'shana hashviyas manochol, that maybe during the seventh year, when they're not producing anymore, they're going to worry about the eighth year. So that's essentially perhaps their concern, as Ramban understands it. Rav Shamshon Afal Hirsch comments regarding that, that it doesn't sound like that's how the Pasuk is reading. So maybe what it means is that they're going to hold back in the seventh year because they're worried about what's going to happen. There won't be enough left over. So what will we eat during the seventh year, even though they know they have food in the seventh year, but maybe they're going to think they're going to have to hold back. And so the Sforno here comments also similar to what we said a moment ago, that a part of the bracha is that this food will be very satisfying, so that will keep them for a while. And then he also adds that that's related to the previous pasuk of Yishavtem Levetach Aleha, that you'll be able to sit tight because you won't have to go to other countries to get food, because you'll be able to have enough to get you through. Rav Liashiv has an interesting comment here, that he thinks that the test is also in terms of this idea of holding back, that maybe, okay, you'll see that you made it through the Shemitah because you saw also that already from the sixth year you had so much, so it's not really about then, but maybe you're going to be skeptical about, okay, but how long is this going to last? Will I make it through the next Shemitah? So you'll think, okay, I'll have to start holding back for all the coming years. So basically, this is telling you that even after the Shemitah, for the following cycle, that you should not worry, that you should eat normally. And that essentially, the first pasuk of the Saliyah is telling you as a commandment, v'yachaltem lasova, that after the Shemitah, keep eating regularly. Don't act like Yosef from Mitzrayim, and don't think you have to start holding back and wait for the famine. And that's a part of the test, that you should be able to have bitachon, that it's going to last you. The last phrase over here in this pasuk chaf, where else says lona asof, as to us saying that we're not going to collect. So it seems like there's what to collect even if you don't plant. So the Gemara in Pesachim, Adaf Nun Aleph Amid Beis, says that's a reference to Sfichim. Sfichim, that even that grow on their own, so we're not allowed to eat. But that's presumably an asmachta, as the Torah Tanima notes, because that we understand is an Issa Rabbanan, that really if the vegetables will grow on their own, so really we should be able to eat that. But Chazal made a gezerah that they were afraid people would plant secretly, and then when people saw it, they would say, oh, it just grew on its own. So they made a gezerah that even that which actually does grow on its own, you couldn't eat. So the Gemara connects that to this pasuk. So if that's an issa d'rabbanan, so presumably that's an asmachta. So here, this very crucial continuation, this next pasuk, so what's going to happen when this doubt is expressed? So says the pasuk, v'tzivisi esprachasi lachem b'shana hashishis, So I will command my bracha for you on the sixth year, and it's going to provide enough, not just for the next year, but for the year after also. So you're going to have all of the produce that you need. So this, as Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch comments here, that this is coming in advance. So it's similar, you know, the whole parallel between Shvius and Shabbos. So it's like the experience in the Midbar, where they had Mon come in the double portion on Friday. So too, we're going to have a parallel experience here. That on the Friday, so to speak, of the yearly cycle, you'll have extra, and that will take you through. So there is a very major question as to the ongoing relevance of this bracha, and it played a huge role in the controversy about the Het Mechira, as we spoke about. So we spoke a few weeks ago about the details of the Het Mechira debate, and a big part of it was that the impetus to sell the land in order to avoid the regulations of Shemitah came from the great tchak, the great tzorech, that it was so difficult to survive without being able to proceed with the planting and the harvesting. So part of the objection of those who thought it was wrong on a number of levels is that we see that the Torah describes that we know Shemitah is going to be hard, and that the whole premise is that Shemitah involves bitachon, and God says, don't worry, I'll take care of you, and that you shouldn't express any lack of confidence in that idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of us through the challenges of Shemitah. So here, one of the major responses of Shul Mikutno, who was a great Gaon, who was one of the major defenders of the, is one of the endorsers of the Het Mechira, I think Rabbi Svengel made this point as well, is that there's a major difference here under the assumption that nowadays Shemitah is Drabbanan. And this is based on a comment that the Sma has, and his comments to Choshen Mishpat Samach Zayin, the Chassam Sofer, his comments to Gittin and Daf Lamed Vav. So it's the same thing, that the bracha is presumably only applicable when Shemitah is Min HaTorah. So if we assume nowadays that Shemitah is Drabbanan, which is the way most assume, it's a somewhat of a machlokes, but most assume that Shemitah is Drabbanan nowadays for a number of possible reasons, and that's certainly the premise of anyone who endorsed the Het Mechira, as we discussed. So they argued that when Shemitah is Min HaTorah, okay, that's when you have this bracha. But if Shemitah is only Midrabbanan, so then why should we assume that we have this bracha? Which, on the surface, certainly seems like a cogent point, that your HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, go along with what I'm asking you to do, and I'm guaranteeing I will take care of you. But if he's not necessarily asking us to do this, and we're volunteering to do it, Shelo Tishtakech Torah Shvius, because we don't want to forget about Shvius, so then why should we necessarily assume that we'll be taken care of? And that's consistent with what the Sma was talking about over there. There he's talking about Prisbul, but he talks about the distinction between Prisbul and Shvius, and what is more shaykh to take on Midrabbanan. And there he notes that we don't necessarily have this guarantee when it comes to Shemitah if we don't have a mitzvah min HaTorah. Similar to someone saying, perhaps, okay, I'm not going to work on Shabbos, and I have confidence that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of me. Okay, that's one thing. But then let's say, all right, I'll say I'll also take off Tuesday, and I'll have a HaKadosh Baruch Hu, confidence that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of me. So say, but God never told you to take off on Tuesday, so why should you have bitachon that He's going to take care of you for that? It's not exactly comparable. So a mitzvah d'rabbanan is different than just a random taking off of work. But the point being that if there's no actual tzivoy to do this, so why should we necessarily assume that there's a bracha that would come along with that? So this was a major pillar of this whole debate. The Chidushi Harim, and his comments to Gittin and Daf Lama Vav, he took the position that he thought that there was a bracha, even when it's a din d'rabbanan. He had a raya there that some didn't like so much. The Paris Yosef has a discussion where he argues on the raya, others talk back and forth about whether this raya is good. From the Chazon Ish, it sounds like he thought that the bracha applied even when there was no actual chiyuv min haTorah of Shemitah. And it parallels in the other direction. The Chazon Ish also assumed that the bracha was also shayach to be undone, to be weakened. That we have a concept of Shema Yigrom HaChet, that the Gemara in Brachos tells us in the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, that Yaakov was worried about his confrontation with Esav, even though God had promised he was going to take care of him. So the Gemara asks, why was he afraid? If God said, I'll take care of you. So the answer was, the Gemara says, Yaakov thought, yes, that was the promise, but that maybe Yaakov had lost his chus, maybe he had sinned somehow, and he wasn't worthy of that continuing. So the Chazon Ish assumed that that kind of concept is relevant here also, that this is the default, that we could have this bracha, but it's also possible that we could misbehave in such a way that we would lose the bracha, or individuals could misbehave in ways that would affect the tzibur, and that the bracha could be weakened. So basically, it's two sides of the same coin, that it correlates to our actual behavior. So that would mean that even when it's in full force, min haTorah, it could be weakened if we're not necessarily worthy of it, and that even when it's not in full force, min haTorah, but if we're showing this commitment voluntarily, and we're taking on the effort, so then the bracha could also correspond to that, even if it wasn't something that was necessarily driven by a obligation min haTorah. So yes, this is a very crucial point, how exactly this plays out, and what does it say about the whole notion of Shemitah nowadays. Okay, so also very, very significant. We'll actually skip in the interest of time during the short aliyah, skip to Pasuk of Gimel. This Pasuk also has great significance for us. V'ha'aretz lo simacher litzmisus ki li ha'aretz ki gerim v'soshavim atam yimadi. So what does this Pasuk mean? So here, how exactly translate this? The land should not be sold in a certain way, litzmisus, God says, because the land is mine, and you are gerim and toshav with me. So what does tzmisus mean? So tzmisus is sometimes translated as forever, permanently. Rav Shamshon, Rav Fal Hirsch, there's a whole discussion about this, that it comes from the word meaning frozen or fixed or permanently. So Rashi quotes in the Torah's Kohanim that this is to create a lo sase, that we know that here we have the din, that if you sell the land, that it has to be returned in Yovel. So this is telling us that there's a lo sase to not return it. There's a love to hold on to it, basically, to refuse to return it. That's a lo sase. To make it into a permanent sale, that's a lo sase. So the Ramban, in his comments to Sefer HaMitzvos, the Ramban argues on this because the language sounds like it's an iser on the seller. So if you're saying the prohibition to hold on to it and to refuse to give it back, that makes it sound like it's an iser on the buyer. So how does that work with the language that sounds like it's an iser on the seller? The Rambam in Hilchos Shemitah in Parakut Aleph, Halacha Aleph, so the Rambam says that if you sell it in such a way that you don't want to allow it to revert it to Yovel, so then both the parties are in violation. The seller and the buyer, they're both over, and the sale nonetheless still goes back. Doesn't stick to what they think. It's reversed nonetheless. So that itself is a very interesting concept. It's parallel to a few other ideas that you have in the Torah, like, for example, the Isser of intermarriage, where the Kedushin isn't Chal anyway in an intermarriage, and yet there's an Isser in the Torah to act as if that's what you're trying to do. So Sefer HaChinuch says similarly that there's an Isser on both parties, on the seller and the buyer, to make a deal like this, even though it doesn't work. Even though Yovel Mahani, that if you're trying to contradict the Torah this way, it's not going to take effect, but the Isser is to act like it. And from the language of the Ramban, and the Som Derech of Simcha Zeslubroid has a whole essay about this, it sounds like the reason you have this Isser on top of what the Torah is telling us not going to take effect anyway, is that basically you should not take an action, you shouldn't make an arrangement that makes it harder for you to comply with what the Torah is demanding. So even though it's not going to work anyway, even though it's of kasa de malka, a phrase we see here in the context of Shemitah and Shemitah's Ksafim, that the Torah is just going to nullify it whether you like it or not. But still, there's an Isser for you to put yourself in a position that makes that difficult for you to go along with. And Simcha Zissel Broyd over there in the Sam Derech has a whole expansion on this idea that this is a notion that's relevant to the whole Torah, that we have a concept that we're not supposed to put ourselves in challenging situations, we're supposed to be Mimayit B'Nisayon, and that that's what is being reflected here. So therefore, it's perhaps the sense that the Torah is giving a specific Isser that could be extrapolated to all of life, that we shouldn't put ourselves in challenging situations, that we shouldn't allow the Nisyonos to be more than necessary, we should be Mimayit B'Nisayon, and this is to represent that whole mentality, that to make a commitment that is going to make it more difficult to go along with what the Torah is going to create a reality anyway, but we're just going to have a harder time going along with it because it's against the arrangement that we made. That itself is an independent Isser. The Ramban also writes that the prohibition therefore becomes it's an Isser to sell it to somebody who will keep it forever. So, for example, to a non-Jew who's not going to feel bound by this. So that's itself a part of the Isser. But he says if you condition with him that he should return it, that Yovel, then you can. There's a whole discussion about this in the Mishnah Melech. And say for Sifzei Tadek, who tends to have interesting sveikos, so he has a suffix, what if a son would sell to his father with this condition that it should be sold forever, but it's not going to be forever because when the father dies, so then the son will inherit it back. So is that an exception? So we say that that's not permanent. So it's an interesting suffix. The Ramban also adds here that another part of the message, which is what the psukim, what the language of the pasuk really also conveys, is that we're supposed to appreciate that this is God's land and that he's telling us how he wants it to be handled, and that we should see ourselves as guests of his hospitality and to appreciate that. And that's also one of the major themes of this mitzvah. Now, there is the position of Rav Nachshon Gaon, Rav Kook emphasized a number of places. He talked about the whole mission of the Keren Keyemes Israel of Kakal to buy up land in Israel. And he talked about the great value of that, so he cited the position of Rav Nachshon Gaon, which is consistent, a little bit of synergy, sort of, with Tosfos in Bava Basra, in the third parak, we didn't fully get there, and Daf Ben Dalet Amud Beis, that even when Eretz Yisrael is not actually in our hands, every Jew has a chelek in Eretz Yisrael. It's as if every Jew has land that he owns, because karka ain't an exela, so even if the land has been conquered by others, but we still have our deed, so to speak, we still have our chelek in the land, and that's something to appreciate, and that's itself very significant. The Netziv has a whole different interpretation here on this pasuk, and he understands that aretz lo simacher litzmisos, that the tzmisos should be understood as absolutely, you shouldn't sell the land absolutely, meaning not to sell it to somebody who would not give it back or would feel that it's an absolute sale. And he understands that to be a reference to selling it to non-Jews. And he then adds that this is a part here that Ziv was very, very opposed to the Hatamathira. I think we mentioned that. He has a whole tshuva where he is greatly opposed to it. And so here in his comment on Chumash, he doesn't go into that whole Arichas, but he understands essentially that this pasuk constitutes an Isser for this purpose specifically, that one should not sell the land in Shemitah in order to try to get out of the regulations of Shemitah. And that happens in Meshech Chachma, and Sefer Shmos has a similar comment that he thinks also there's a pasuk in Shmos making the same point, that we're not supposed to try to get out of the Isurim of Shemitah by selling the land. So the Netziv understands this pasuk in this sense, that that's what it's coming to tell us, we shouldn't sell for that purpose. And he says that's what the next pasuk is telling us, that Geula Titnu La'aretz, that we have to then get a redemption, that that's coming to say that if you have sold the land for that purpose, so then you should redeem it in order to allow the observance of Shemitah. You know, parenthetically, the Nimuk Yosef has a comment in the Bav Metzia on that last pasuk, where he says that that's to show you that you can't make a tenai against this, against the land coming back in Yovel. That even though the Gemara says in Makos that you can make a tenai on Shemitah's Ksafim, that the Shemitah shouldn't be Meshamet, so here you can't make a tenai, the pasuk is telling you it's absolutely going to have to go back. But the Netziv here says differently about this idea that he has, that he shouldn't sell the land for Shemitah, so if you do, it should be redeemed, and that's a part of his whole position, that is against the Hatta Mechira. Now, this goes back to the previous point also, that presumably if you want to say that this is what the Pasuk is telling us, still would be in the context of the Pasuk, so therefore presumably it would be tied into the understanding that Shemitah would have to be Daraisa for it to mean that. Now that it's Siv, not mistaken, that was his position, that Shemitah is still Daraisa. He wrote in his Tshuva that he thought the Hetta Mechira was such a bad idea, especially because Lo Sechanim, to sell land in general, is an Isser Daraisa, and Shemitah, if you say Shemitah is Drabanan, so it makes no sense to avoid the Isser Drabanan, and to do an Isser Daraisa is worse. It's running away from a lion and running into a wolf, or whichever one is more dangerous, wolf, lion, wolf, but it's not going to make sense. So he was saying that, I believe L'shitasim, that if you believe Shemitah's Drabanan, then all the more so it doesn't make sense to avoid it by an Isser Daraisa. I'm just afraid that we're running out of time. But here he's saying that he's saying a specific Isser for the purposes of Shemitah. So if you're going to say that that's the case, presumably that applies if Shemitah is Daraisa, which I believe is L'shitasim, but if Shemitah is Drabanan, then even if that's what the pasuk is getting at, then it's a bigger question whether to say that that's really still the message, or maybe that the message on a different level. That becomes a complicated question. So there's a big debate, as we noted at the time, about the issues of the Hetta Mechira, and as we saw, there are intense arguments on both sides. And it's important to appreciate that both sides, as we noted then, are coming from really the same values, and they're trying to figure out how to get to the same place. They're trying to get to the place where the brachos of Shemitah are fully able to be realized. Everyone agrees that it's not the ideal, it's not what it's meant to be, it's not the vision that the Torah is describing. But the question is, if indeed we don't have the full possibility to have this bracha even being offered, so what does it take in order to set up the system so that we'll be able to survive long enough to get there? And others thought that it is in effect, and therefore we should be acting like that right now. But it was a machlokas, really, l'shem shamayim, and that we have to recognize that that's what's a part of the process, and to appreciate that. And I mentioned at the time that the way all the discussions of Shemitah end, and we say we should soon be zochet, the full, have all these full brachos, that Shemitah should be deraisa, and all the brachos associated with it should be fully relevant, and that in order for that to be the case, the way we talk about it probably will play a big role in making that happen. So we should also note that today is Lag BaOmer, and Lag BaOmer we are celebrating the end of the dying of the students of Rabbi Akiva. And it's crucial to appreciate they shouldn't die for nothing. We shouldn't lose the message. That the message is, the Gemara tells us, that they died al shlo nohgu kavod elazar, and that we have to get the message, that we have to remember to treat each other with kavod, and that Talmid Chachamim treat each other with kavod, and that the machlokes l'shem shamayim elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. So here too, a machlokes where you have parties who are working very hard to try to bring about an ultimate reality where there will be a full realization of all of the vision of the Torah and what Eretz Yisrael and Shemitah and everything associated with it could be and could bring about, and different understandings of the realities that are involved in bringing that to its full realization, but be able to recognize the covet of each other and the good motives of each other, and to do honor to the V'ahavta l'arecha kamocha of Rabbi Akiva that he tried to instill in his Talmidim, and unfortunately somehow still l'nogu kavod zeh lazeh, because it's still possible to somehow have that get lost in the big picture. So as we celebrate the end of the tekufa in which they were dying, and we look to move beyond that, and that's really the message of Lag BaOmer, that we're able to rebuild beyond that destruction, as we look to rebuild beyond the galus and beyond the churban, and what will it take to be able to really renew and to really have a full picture of what the Torah is describing. So this message of being noy kavod elazeh and appreciating the good intent and the good motives of the Talmidei Chachamim who are working towards the same goal, that's what we strive for, and ken yehi ratzon. So everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos. Stay tuned for future share of our plans, and we will be in touch.